This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz Dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Today, we have a special guest who I bet every single one of our listeners is already a fan of.
Absolutely.
So excited. But let me say first what the show is.
It's Paula Abdul. Paula Abdul is...
it's because for years now, we've always said that opposites attract. Like the two of
us. That's why you and I came together.
That's right. I take things easy.
And I like to smoke.
No, baby, I make a mess. Or no, wait.
Wait, no. I have a really important question.
No, I did it wrong. Go ahead. Which one am I? Am I the cartoon cat or Paula Abdul?
That's literally exactly what I was going to ask. I think you're MC Scat Cat.
So Matthew, hold on. Have we even said yet what the show is about today?
Oh, I don't know. I never remember things that happened like 4 minutes ago.
Okay. So today's episode is pan fried noodles.
Yeah. And our special guest is, I'm going to say, better than Paula Abdul. Take that.
Yes. And definitely better than the weird cartoon cat, like by a million times. Oh, and here comes our special guest.
So to teach us about pan-fried noodles today, we've got Caitlin and Sarah Lung from The Woks of Life. And The Woks of Life is just one of the best recipe and cooking blogs of all time. It was created by a family of four, Bill, Judy, Sarah, and Caitlin Lung. And it is Spilled Milk's number one resource for Chinese cuisine. And if you've listened to this show, like it's probably yours also. Many recipes from The Woks of Life are certainly Amster Burton family favorites. And it is now also a best-selling cookbook, The Woks of Life, Recipes to Know and Love from a Chinese American family. And we are delighted to have Sarah and Caitlin on Spilled Milk today. Sarah and Caitlin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Congratulations on your book launch. I feel so lucky that we are able to talk with the two of you in the midst of such a busy time. So congrats.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been a whirlwind for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I bet. Yeah. How's it going? Like, have you done any like memorable events or met any cool people so far? I mean, aside from us, obviously we're cool people.
I mean, duh. We have met some really cool people. We got to meet J. Kenji Lopez Alt, which is super exciting. Obviously, we know of him. many people do. But yeah, we got to meet him in person and chat with him at Book Larder out in Seattle. So that was really great.
Awesome. Yeah.
And then we've also met Grace Young, who is like...
I love Grace.
Yeah, she is like an icon and an OG and such a great advocate for Chinatowns and for Chinese cooking. So, you know, we like brought our copies of her books for her to sign. And, you know, we just had a great panel discussion with her the other day, actually about authenticity in Chinese cooking. So, yeah, it's just been really awesome because we're usually like hidden behind our computers, like at our house in the middle of nowhere, New Jersey. And it's been really great getting out and meeting people and meeting readers too.
Yeah, we have had Kenji on the show. We should ask Grace if she would be on our show.
Yeah, she's amazing.
So what are pan-fried noodles? Like, let's jump right in.
Yeah, so I think that there's a lot of confusion when it comes to pan-fried noodles because you see a lot of different translations of it, and there's just so many, like, quote-unquote fried noodle dishes out there that it can sometimes be confusing. But a pan-fried noodle is primarily a Hong Kong-style crispy noodle that you you boil the noodle first to cook it, and then you pan-fry it in oil, and you get this, like, really crispy, kind of thin, golden noodle that you can then either stir fry with other ingredients, or you could just have this kind of fried golden cake of noodles and then put on top of it like a stir fry of like meat and vegetables.
Yeah, we call it crispy noodle cake in my house. Like when someone requests it for dinner, that's what they say.
Yes, that is accurate.
So will you talk a little bit about the type of noodle that you use?
Yeah, so it's a thin Hong Kong style noodle. You'll find it in Chinese grocery stores. Not to be confused with Hong Kong style wonton noodles, which can sometimes trip people up because they look kind of similar. They're a similar thickness and they're both kind of, they have like that yellowish color. One, the wonton noodle is actually meant to be cooked in soup, while the pan-fried noodle is meant to be obviously pan-fried. So you'll find it in the Chinese grocery store labeled literally Hong Kong style pan-fried noodle. You can actually buy it fresh or you could buy it dried. So you can see it in the refrigerated section near the other fresh noodles, or you can go to the dried noodle aisle. And some of the varieties are like shrimp flavored, if that's your thing. Mm-hmm. They actually have shrimp added to the noodle dough, which is also really delicious and something that we ate a lot of when we were in Hong Kong a few years ago.
Is this the kind of dish where, like, if you can't find that particular noodle, can you substitute or should you just make something else?
It's really tough. I would say make something else, honestly.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I've tried with other noodles and I've actually tried making them from scratch. So we have a Chinese egg noodle recipe on the blog and I was like, hey, these kind of look, they look a little bit like the pan-fried noodles. And I was like, I wonder if I could pan-fry them. And it's just not the same. Nope. No, it doesn't really work. The noodle itself is almost like it has a kind of a dryish texture.
Yeah, what I was going
to
say.
Yeah. And so if you try to pan-fry a regular fresh noodle dough, it just kind of turns out it's not as crispy. It kind of cakes together and doesn't like stay separate. So it's a challenging one for sure.
Yeah. The brand that I've seen most often is, I think, Twin Marquee. I always get the Twin Marquee and Twin Dragon brands confused.
Those are classic brands. Yeah.
Yeah. I have occasionally substituted like something that I found like in the, you know, Asian ingredients aisle at the supermarket. And like, I don't mind if it kind of like mushes together into a cake as long as it's crispy on the outside. So if that sounds like it could be your thing, it won't be the same, but it's worth a shot.
It's worth a shot. Yeah. And if for example, you're gluten-free, you could attempt it with like a rice noodle where you like, you know, you boil the rice noodles, you rinse them off to get rid of the excess starch. You kind of let them dry off a bit and just fluff them up a bit and like maybe toss them in a little bit of oil and then try to pan fry it. Like, I haven't actually personally tried that, but I feel like it's worth a shot, especially if you're gluten free.
So in the book, you've got like a beef and vegetable stir fried dish to serve on top of pan fried noodles, which looks excellent. And then I noticed on the website, you've got many stir fried noodle fried noodle dishes. Can you serve any stir fry on top of pan fried noodles? And if not, like, how do you choose one that will go well?
I think you can, essentially serve any stir fry you like over a pan fried noodle. I think that ideally the stir fry is relatively saucy because you want that sauce to kind of seep into the noodles and flavor them, but not too much sauce because sometimes there's too much sauce and then you lose the crispiness of the noodle.
Yeah.
But the classics are kind of, there's a chicken version, which we have on the blog. We did the beef version for the cookbook. Actually, one of my favorites is the pork pan-fried noodle because it has Chinese garlic chives in it, and it's like a really tasty, delicate flavor. There are actually dishes where there's no sauce at all, or like the noodle dish is primarily dry. And this is like a dry stir fry, and the texture of the noodle is mostly just crispy, which that one's one of my favorites.
Excellent.
I feel like you also left out the seafood variety.
Oh, yes. Seafood is another one.
Oh, for sure.
With shrimp and scallops.
And squid. Squid? Yeah, squid.
Why not?
So for listeners who may have never made or eaten these kinds of pan-fried noodles, is the goal to have sort of this like cake with defined boundaries, or do you want it to be like almost like a nest of noodles that you can unravel, or is it up to the chef or the cook?
I'm glad you asked this question. It's a good question because I think for most of our lives, we've been used to more of like a nest of noodles where it's crispy. There are some like more soft parts, so you get like more of a variety of texture. And I think actually something that has become a popular shortcut, especially in restaurants, is like just kind of like shallow frying the noodles into like a cake form. And that's where that kind of like cake shape, I think, like that term probably comes from. And then you get like, it's almost like crispy to the extreme. And I'll speak for myself, but I also think that this is the case in our entire family. Like we prefer the nest approach, where it's a little bit less like high octane on the crispy factor.
Sure.
And then you get like more like you can actually like pick up some, you know, you get a good noodle pull out of it.
Okay. This is really interesting because I have always done like the high octane crispy cake version at home. And so now I'm going to like take it upon myself and take your advice and try the more nest-like approach.
But there's different philosophies.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
oh, sure.
You know, Sarah will stand over the stove and like really make sure that like almost every noodle is crisp. Whereas when I'm making it, I like to back off earlier because I like a little chewy feeling. And I don't like to just feel like I'm kind of like eating this pile of like matchstick noodles, but Sarah will like scoff at me and be like, "You simpleton, like you're eating your crispy noodles, not that crispy." And I'm like, "Eh, to each their own."
Well, I have a question about this then. So, okay, when you're flipping the cake of pan-fried noodles, can you just like flip it in that like confident chefy way? Or do you have to use like a couple spatulas and a plate? And or does it depend upon like the style in which you're cooking them?
And if you can't do this, feel free to lie and say you can. Who's going to?
I feel like it's really a forgiving dish. It's not even as nerve-wracking, I don't think, as like a frittata can be. If I were to make it, I would just flip it in sections. Like I would take a spatula and like, you know, flip it in quarters. If you have the arm strength and like the arm length, like my short arm just like can't handle like every shape of wok, like doing a one generous flip. Like I'm like, you know, like I kind of struggle a little bit. You could do it in one go if you feel confident. But yeah, even if it kind of flops over, you just straighten it out a little bit. And, you know, they're noodles, so you can kind of reshape them.
Yeah, the thing I do at home, and like we said, like I like make like the matchstick overly crisp noodles approach. I will like slide it out of the pan onto a plate. Then I'll put another plate on top of that and flip it and then slide it back in. So I've like dirtied two
Very
plates
nice.
Unnecessarily.
That's what dishwashers are
That's
for.
That's what dishwashers are for. Yep. Exactly. Yes.
So I noticed while we were researching for this episode that a pan-fried noodle dish was maybe the first episode you ever published on Walks of Life. And I'm not sure if it was one of the ones that you mentioned when we were talking about different topics. I think it was like the spicy one.
Yes, it was the very first recipe that we recorded on the blog way back in 2013. And it was that because actually, you know, we talk about the origin story of the blog a lot. You know, my sister and I grew up loving to cook, but we realized we had no idea how to cook like the foods that our parents prepared for us growing up. Maybe we took them for granted a little bit. And so we started the blog to record those recipes. But I would say that like the one Chinese thing that we reliably could make was these pan-fried noodles because they're so easy. And our mom taught us how to make them at a really early age. Often it was like our after school snack. I'm saying snacks, sure. Snack in air quotes because it was like a full meal. but it's basically just, as I mentioned, you boil the noodles for not long, like 1 minute. You drain them and then you pan fry them in oil on both sides. You go for whatever crispy level you prefer. and from there, you take them out, you put them on a plate, you drizzle with a little bit of Chinese light soy sauce, a little bit of sesame oil, and maybe a little bit of chili oil if that's your thing. If you want a little bit of white pepper on there, that adds a little something. You mix it and that's it. It's the easiest recipe ever. And it was the first one we recorded because it was the one that we actually knew how to make. Like, I literally had it for lunch 2 days ago. Like, we still eat it really often.
I love it.
Yeah, it's one of my all-time favorite, like, easy meals to throw together.
It's one of those recipes where it's almost terrifying. Like, when you sit down, you're like, I think that's enough. And then you're like, well, maybe like a little more, like just one more handful. And then like you have this plate that's just like mounded with noodles. And like as you eat it, you're just like, and like it's gone. Like it's just gone. Like where like if you were to sit down and eat the equivalent amount of spaghetti, like you might be like concerned. Uh-huh. But like the noodles are so like thin and light and just like delicious. Like, that's why we call it a quote-unquote snack. It's not actually that filling, to be fair to us. Not that filling. But yeah, it's just, like, incredibly delicious. And, like, when you use, like, your preferred chili oil, because, like, now there's so many out there, you know, it's that much better.
We will link to that recipe in the show notes at spilledmilkpodcast.com. Molly's heard this story a million times, but when I was so now as an adult, like I have an embarrassingly small appetite for a food person. But when I was a teenager, a frequent after school snack would be I would come home from school, I would get a couple of Costco burger patties out of the freezer, I would turn on the gas grill, grill them up, put a couple of Kraft singles on there, and that would be my after school snack. And then I would eat dinner.
That's incredible.
Don't even know who that guy was.
So I remember a time, it was when Matthew and I recorded an episode about like apple varieties or something. And Matthew had probably eaten the equivalent of half of an average sized apple and was like, oh, God. Oh, that's really filling. And I was like,
hey, fiber.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
Fiber.
I hit a wall at some point. It could happen to you. So speaking of things that can be very crispy, if that's the way you like it. So this is not a noodle dish, but I just wanted to highlight the Hong Kong style crispy rice skillet recipe in the book is one of my favorite things I have ever made in my kitchen.
Oh,
like,
thank
especially
you.
Wow. Like, you know, I've had clay pot rice in Hong Kong. You know, I loved it. It was like the whole experience was wonderful. And I was like, but I could never recreate that at home. I can get it at a restaurant in Seattle. And then like I made your cast iron skillet version at home. And it was like every bit as good and perfectly crisp and released perfectly. Everyone should buy the book and try that recipe too.
Wow. Yay. Thank you. That was mine. Yay. I thought of that one.
Sarah really late. Well, first my dad labored over that one and then kind of passed the baton to Sarah to bring it on home.
We did a lot of recipe switching throughout the writing process when we were like, oh man, I'm really stuck on this one. You want to trade? And we would like trade recipes.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Struggling with. Yeah. So my dad was really struggling with that one. And I was like, dude, you got to soak the rice. And he was like, no. He's like, nah, that's not going to do anything, is it? And I was like, let me try it. And I have to say, got that one on the first try. It was a good one.
Oh, do you remember any other notable recipe trades? This didn't even occur to me.
When I was thinking of Sarah's, the mango pudding, but I can't remember what I gave to you back.
I don't remember, but we ended up cutting
I guess
that
we
from
cut the mango pudding.
Yeah,
but
we
it's
cut
on the blog.
Mango.
Okay.
It's on the blog, but we did cut it out of the book. I think that there were definitely some seafood recipes that we all just kind of pushed onto my dad because he is like the king of preparing seafood. And I was just like, I don't know how to do this. Like, can you do yeah. So it was funny, you know, when we were assigning the recipes to each of the four of us. So each of us did around a quarter of the recipes in the book, we definitely like played to each other's strengths. So like my dad kind of led on a lot of the meat and the fish dishes. And then, you know, my mom did a lot of the very traditional recipes. And then my sister and I were, you know, where you see like lazy girl noodles yeah. or like that kind of stuff is us. So, yeah, it was really fun to write the book together.
I think one that got kicked back and forth a lot, at least between me and my mom, was the Manto recipe. Mm-hmm. There's a recipe for like, it's like a steamed white bread, sort of like a neutral, very neutral sort of fluffy white bun that's like popular in northern China as mm-hmm. like a substitute for rice, actually. So it can be eaten steamed like with savories, or it can be eaten as a dessert dipped in condensed milk. As with most breads, like Manto is just like deceptively simple, but ultimately incredibly like beguiling to make at home sure. successfully, because there's all sorts of like litmus tests of like when you've like reached Manto nirvana of like, oh, if you like press it down, does it like slowly bounce back? And like the outside should be like very free of and minimal of bubbles, and yeah. like the skin mm-hmm. quote unquote the skin should be like thin and like smooth, and like I was just like driven to the brink of sanity with that recipe.
Sure.
So like my mom had to like step in. She was like, do you want me to help you? And I was like, yes, please.
It sounds so nice, like such a nice way to work. Like Molly and I have both not written cookbooks, but food books with recipes. And we did it like solo. And the idea of like having like several family members to foist the tough recipes off on sounds really appealing.
Mm-hmm. It mm-hmm. is very nice.
So for people who are not already all up on the walks of life, where can people find you online?
Everybody can find us at thewalksoflife.com or walksoflife.com.
Oh, you got both.
We'll get you to, yes, both okay. will get you to the same place.
It's a recent development.
Excellent.
That is a recent development. And
did you have to like pay some domain squatter?
We did. So this domain guy, like it was something like 10 years ago, offered it to us for a lot of money. And I was like, that's okay. We'll pass. And then I think he just got tired of waiting and was like, listen, I'll give it to you for this. And I was like, okay, that's fair. Nice. We'll do that. So that was good. But yes, thewalksoflife.com. We also have a YouTube channel, The Walks of Life. We're also on Instagram, we're on Facebook, and we are on Pinterest as well.
All right. And the book is The Walks of Life, Recipes to Know and Love from a Chinese American Family. I don't know why I'm holding it up because this is not a video podcast.
Hey, we like to see it.
Yeah, and you can get it wherever you get books. You know where to get books. So Caitlin and Sarah, thank you again for being on Spilled Milk. This was a delight.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
This was great.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The legend of Cayman Jack is just around the corner. Mixed with blue agave nectar, real lime juice, and cane sugar for the perfect balance of sweet, salty, and sour every time. Discover legendary taste with Cayman Jack, America's number one margarita. Premium flavored malt beverage. Please drink responsibly. All registered trademarks used under license by American Vintage Beverage Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Do we need to say anything else about pan-fried noodles? I feel like Sarah and Caitlin really covered it. Do I have memory lane? My memory lane is like, you know, I used to make this when December was little, and sometimes they would say that their pick of the week was crispy noodle cake. That's it.
I keep meaning to institute this pick of the week thing at my
you
household.
Gotta.
But the thing is I don't plan dinners as a lump like you do. Hold on, wait. When do you plan the menu for the week?
I've really gotten out of the habit.
Okay.
And like now that we're empty nesters, like picks of the week don't happen as frequently, like usually just when December comes home for holidays. And it's a lot looser and more improvised these days, because like I'm a chill older guy who just like, you know, lies around in a robe and like weirdly creepy, I guess.
I was waiting for you to finish the sentence. Like I'm just a chill older guy who lies. around in a robe. I was like, where is this going to go?
Most of what I say on the show is a lie. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why we're really grateful that Sarah and Caitlin came in today to set the record straight.
Yes. All right. So shall we do some segments?
Yeah. Matthew, I've been snacking.
Okay. My question to you based on that statement is, hey, what you snacking? You gotta tell me what you're snacking, or I'll release the kraken. So what you snacking?
What you snacking? Okay, at the time that we are recording this episode, because you know we always record a little bit before you, the listener, hears it, not live, for instance.
That's right, that's right.
So Matthew recently got back from Tokyo, came over to my house to visit our baby, and brought me a literal sack full of treats from Tokyo. And one of the treats was something you have mentioned in a recent episode. Matthew, would you pronounce it properly, what these rice crackers are?
I think actually I'm like giving a brand name of a different one, but the one that I bought in the past, which I think is a slightly different brand, is Waza Waza Kachiwade Sembe.
Okay.
So it's like deliberately smashed sembe.
The only part I could remember was Waza Waza because I really love it.
I just call them Waza Wazas.
Okay.
Waza Waza means deliberately.
I mean, for me, with the particular vernacular of my head, I hear it a little bit like Fozzie the Bear, like Waka Waka.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So anyway, Waza Waza, these broken, deliberately broken rice crackers, and they are like coated in this like spicy, slightly tingly stuff. And anyway, Matthew, they're so good. And yesterday, June saw me eating some.
And they're pretty spicy.
Well, June was like, can I try one? And I was like, yeah, totally. And June was like, how spicy are they? And I decided not to sugarcoat it. I said, they're pretty spicy. June chowed down.
They are the same spice level as Flamin' Hot Cheetos. So of course, kids are going to like them.
Question for you, Matthew.
Yeah.
If I wanted to be able to get some in the States, can I find them at my local Asian market, you know, that carries a bunch of Japanese things? What do you think?
That is a good question. So I've gotten the non-spicy version of these at Owajimaya many times. I have not looked to see if they're carrying the spicy ones, but I'm hoping they are.
Okay.
I will report back to you on this soon.
Okay. Or maybe we could even link to some of them that could be, you know, ordered online
in the show notes. So yeah, they seem like they've gotten super popular in Japan. You know, they have them at the convenience stores, at the konbini. Like they'll have like individual size packs of the regular and the spicy.
What I love about the particular crunch of it is that like it's a really dense crunch. Rice crackers are a very different kind of crunch from, say, a Flamin' Hot Cheeto, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But these are even crunchier because...
Oh, yeah. Did I tell you my crunchy rice cracker story from a recent trip to Tokyo?
I don't think so.
Okay. There's this little teeny tiny tea cafe in Tokyo that I love called Susumuya. It's they're originally from Kagoshima, and they have this little tiny outpost in Tokyo that really is a walk-up counter that also has two seats. So I took wife of the show, Lori, to this, who's not a huge Japanese green tea fan. She likes the hojicha roasted tea better than the sencha green tea. But like for some reason, like I walked up to the counter and said, like, give me two senchas. And the sencha at this place is super bitter and intense, the way I like it, and not necessarily the way Watsa likes it. So she's like sipping this very bitter tea, and she's like, could we get a snack to go with this? Like, how about one of those sembes? Like, so they had a big sembe with rock sugar coating on it. So I'm like, yeah, let's have one of those. So we cracked open this sembe, and it was the loudest sembe in the world. So we're sitting in this tranquil, tiny little tea shop, like crunching like barbarians. It was very satisfying.
Fantastic.
And it was delicious.
Okay. All right. I look forward to seeing maybe some sources that we can find in the show notes.
I will definitely. I am on it.
Okay. Matthew, what you snacking?
Oh, I didn't actually prep anything for this episode.
Oh, that's cool. Because I feel like my what you snacking is sort of a collaborative what you
snacking. It is a collaborative snack.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were starting a new startup called Snack Collab. It's a way for people like remote workers to collaborate on snacks. And we're looking for some venture capital.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we're always looking for venture capital.
Pretend we're recording this before that bank collapsed and like venture capital exploded.
But Matthew, on the bright side, do we have any mail?
We do have some swelled mail. It's from listener Marina. I recently read this article from Gastro Obscura and was wondering if host Matthew has eaten a Tachibana. And she links to an article from the Gastro Obscura website by a friend of the show and recent Now But Wow pick, Florentina Liao, who wrote an article about this traditional citrus fruit in Japan called the Tachibana. So listener Marina continues. Years ago, I read an article in Lucky Peach magazine, RIP, about these apricots that you can only get in Turkey, and it makes me really want to travel just to eat these things. Are there any rare foods that you, hosts and or producer of Spilled Milk podcast, have eaten while traveling or would like to travel and eat? So first off, I have not eaten a Tachibana. I've eaten several other Japanese native citrus fruits, but not that one. Molly, have you eaten any like rare or unusual foods, special foods while traveling, or are there any you would like to?
You know, I mean, something that comes to mind, Matthew, is so especially on the first trip that I ever took to Tokyo with you, where it was just the two of us. Do you want to break into song?
Just the two of us.
There we go.
We can snack it if we try.
So we went to Takano, which is the store that has all of these like expensive, yes, fancy fruits. You know, this isn't exactly rare, but there's nowhere else that I can think of that I could get it. We went to the like parfait counter in Takano.
Yes, the Puffario.
And I had a melon parfait. And so it was like this, like the most perfectly ripe. It was a green melon, but it had like the most incredible aroma. It wasn't your ordinary honeydew. It was just mind-blowingly good, this melon. And, you know, I think that fruit is a really interesting... I'm so glad that Marina brought up fruit, because I think that fruit is a really interesting case. Like, I'm thinking of this melon at Takano. I'm also thinking of traveling in France and encountering plums that I'd never had before, like these green plums called Reine Claude, or like Queen Claude plums, which I think now you can find in other places, or even Mirabelle plums, which used to be harder to find. These like small yellowish and greenish plums. It just blew my mind that something as simple as a plum could be so different across an ocean.
Oh yeah. Fruit, like there are still like a lot of fruits that that don't travel well. And so like is something still be truly local. So
I have another thought.
Yeah.
So, you know, like damson plums in the UK, these tiny, like almost grape size plums, right? And they have a pit inside which leaves not a lot of room for flesh. And they are really prized for making jam. Well, like, I don't know anybody who's growing damson plums in large quantities in the States, except Meritake Farm,
of course,
in Washington State. So anyway, yeah, these fruits really, I don't know why I keep thinking of plums, but these fruits that are really prized in other places, I find it so exciting to encounter them, maybe even more than other more elaborate dishes. Like it's just, especially maybe because they're only available for short seasons. So it feels extra special when you happen to be there at the right time.
What this made me think of, listener Marina's question, is like, you know, I think a lot of like when someone says like, you know, we have like a prized rare local food, there is a stated or unstated, you know, assumption that goes along with that. And which is that, you know, you visitor are probably going to find this challenging, and maybe even like, you know, a lot of locals may find this challenging. And that is certainly true of some foods in Japan. So I am trying to like have more of an open mind to those sort of things, like not that I've closed-minded about them, but just like going in with the assumption like, you know, this is a rare prize thing because some people really enjoy eating it, and maybe I could be one of those people too. And so like a couple of examples that come to mind. So one is a thing that I didn't eat and wish I had, which is many years ago, we took a trip to Thailand. We ate a couple times at this restaurant called Walampong Food Station, which is one of the best restaurants I've ever been to in my life. And they had on the specials board an ant egg omelet that I kept looking up at and being like, I wonder what that's like. And I didn't try it, and I wish I had. more recently in Japan. Did I already mention the buttered potato dish that we got?
Ooh, that sounds familiar to me, but I don't, it could just be because butter and potatoes always sounds familiar.
So there's actually like a phrase in Japanese that means like rare taste or special taste that refers to this kind of food that is, you know, not to everyone's taste, but is probably expensive and interesting and some people really go for. And one of those things is shiokata, which is salted, fermented seafood or shellfish innards. So we had this dish that I did not realize was going to contain this when I ordered it, but was like foil roasted potatoes with butter and squid shiokata. So like some part of the squid that has been salted and fermented for quite a while, I think, maybe like for a year. And so it's like very salty, very intense and funky, and has like a chewy texture that is no longer really like what you expect of like either raw or cooked squid. And did I like actively like it? Not really, but like I was, you know, excited that we had gotten something rare and unexpected. And I really liked the kind of like, you know, intense savory undertone that it gave to the whole dish, even though I didn't eat many of the actual like squid bits. And we also, like, I probably talked about this also, but we had some mountain vegetables at another meal. And mountain vegetables is like, you know, it's like wild gathered foraged stuff that is generally like not cultivatable.
And we're talking different from like a mountain yam.
Different from a mountain yam. So that's not technically considered a mountain vegetable, even though it has mountain in the name, I think, because it can be cultivated. Mm-hmm. These are more like, you know, seasonal things like, you know, like the North American equivalent, I think, would be like ramps. Like you will only get them in season and they're only like wild gathered. And so we had one of those that we had on this trip was called Fuki, which translates as butter burr in English.
And
we had it two different parts of the plant that I don't think I even realized when I was ordering were two different parts of the same plant until I like looked it up on my little dictionary app. But it's sort of like a, you know, like a celery, like watery stalk with like a flowering head, and both parts are eaten. So we had like a, you know, kind of lightly dressed salad of the stalks, which I found more challenging. They have like, you know, they look and chew like celery, but have a very different flavor with kind of like a sweetness to them.
Oh.
And then the flower buds, like the flowering, the inflorescences were served in like a goma ai, like a sesame dressing. And that I love, just like a intensely like chewy texture and like very like green vegetal flavor. I was like all over that dish.
Oh man, so, I love hearing about this. Oh, I'm so glad.
I want to encounter more like rare foods while traveling in the future and like try and be like more open to enjoying them than maybe I have been in the past.
Good job, Matthew. And thank you, listener Marina, for asking us such a great question.
And of course, we'll link to listener Flory's article in the show notes.
Great. Well, Matthew, anything else that we want to add?
No, I'm just so excited we got to talk to two of the walks of life.
I know. It's like a true brush with celebrity. They're amazing. Okay. Well, our producer is Abby Circatella.
Also, like, it's great that we get to work with producer Abby, celebrity producer.
Yes, it's true. It's true.
She produced, you know, when Paula Abdul and MC Scat Cat did that podcast where they like did like a re-listen to all of Paula Abdul's albums and talked about a different song on each episode.
Was that like Abdul Island Discs?
Yep. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay.
And love that show that we just made up. I wish we should like I need to re-listen to that song, which I haven't listened to in a while, so that next time you make an MC Scat Cat, like, you know, feed me an MC Scat Cat line, like I can follow up with the actual line, because all I will ever come up with is I like to smoke.
It's okay, because I messed up my part too. I thought that I was being so smart, like feeding you the first half, but then when I completed it after you messed up with the smoking part, I got it wrong too.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, this is really for the jury to decide at this point. Like, you know, we've done the crime. We're going to do the time.
Okay.
Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, you can say it's better than that MC Scat Cat podcast that doesn't exist.
You can chat with other Spilled Milk listeners on Reddit at everythingspilledmilk.reddit.com.
Thanks to the listener who, I think on the last episode, I asked if there was like a Tinder for friends, and we called it Friend Grinder, and someone posted and said, yeah, there is something like that. So thank you to that person.
Thank you. Well, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk, the show that...
We've been like crisping together so long, you'll never pull us apart.
Oh, that's so good, Matthew.
Thanks.
Ah, oh, I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Hipster Burton. Let's go to segments.
Okay.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.